The 16th of September, and this is Rabbi Manny Shearer.
My plan, Im Yetzer Hashem, is to get through to 11:15, although I find it difficult to speak without drinking water. So the shiur will end either at 11:15 or when my voice gives out, whichever is the earlier. So we'll see how that works. The plan in the longer term, I'd like to try and connect in some way the theme of the topic that we're dealing with on a weekly basis with the parsha. Now, you know, rabbis are good at connecting everything with everything, whether or not they're connected. It doesn't seem to make much difference. But I think there are some key connections, and some of them will come out more clearly than others, but that's really just a link. The real topic is the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro that we're trying to deal with. So what are we doing today? First of all, there are sheets over here. If anyone doesn't have a sheet, there are some at the back there and some outside. Today's topic is Gnevat Das. Gnevat Das. Gnevat Das is a fascinating topic. And one of the reasons I chose to do it today, there are two reasons. One is because I was going to do it in Parshas Toldos, which is the most obvious place to do Gnevat Das, where Yaakov is pretending to be Esav and Yitzchak is blind, and it's a gift, Gnevat Das, for that Parsha. But I plan to be in the America that week. So you will miss out on that Parsha in terms of my shiur. Someone else, I'm sure, will give a wonderful shiur that week. So I decided to do it today. Why? Because there's a very beautiful tefillah at the end of Me'ilah. It's once a year tefillah that you say just as Me'ilah is reaching a climax. For me, this is always an important moment as well, because I was born in the middle of Me'ilah. I actually once made a joke when someone was at our Shabbos table about being born in the middle of Me'ilah, and it's a wonder they didn't call me Neil. And one of the girls at the table actually told me my father was born in the middle of Me'ilah, and they did call him Neil. So, you know, exactly, yes. Yeah. So it could have easily happened as well. But so, apart from being my birthday, we say a beautiful thank you. We're not quite yet. Next week, we say a very beautiful tefillah, which is Vatitin Lanu Hashem Elokeinu Biahava Et Yom Tzom Kippurim Hazeh Keitz Umechila V'Slicha. It's the climax of Mechila and Slicha. Al Kol Avonoseinu, for all of our averas. And so, what are those averas? What do we mention? L'man Nechtel Mi Oshek Yadeinu. When do we ever daven about Oshek? What's Oshek even? Do we even know what Oshek is? Oshek is theft. We ask to do tshuva principally for the ways in which we have stolen from other people, okay? But nashuv alecha, we will do tshuva to you. So what's the oshek yadeinu? So theft comes in many different packages. Sometimes a person is stealing money. Sometimes a person could be stealing sleep, stealing people's time. But there is another kind of stealing, which is stealing people's da'at. Ideas, copyright, which is a different kind of thing altogether. Today I want to speak about Gnevat Das, which actually sounds like it's copyright, but it's not, it's something else, which is misleading other people into thinking that you are someone or something, or you did something that you aren't really, or you didn't really do. And this person now feels that they owe you one, they owe you a favor, because of the image that you've presented to them, and they carry that forward. And Chazal have some very serious things to say about this issue. Let's go from the very beginning and have a look at the Pesukim. So the Pasuk in the Ten Commandments in the Aseret HaDibros, which deals with Gneva, I think is probably quite well known, where it says Lo Tignoiv, is actually talking about kidnapping people. Because of the context that all of the prohibitions there are capital crimes, murder, adultery, etc. So Lo Tignoiv is kidnapping people. So I don't propose to speak about that today, except to say that it's a very bad idea, don't do it. Kidnapping people is clearly part of Gneva. However, there is another Gneva, Lo Tignovu, or Lo Tignoivu, I should say, Lo Tignovu, do not steal, Lo Techachashu, Lo Techakru, Ish Ba'amito, and do not deny claims and do not lie, Ish Ba'amito, each person to their amit. What's an amit? A friend, a fellow person. An amito is usually the code word in the Pasuk for it being a mitzvah between Jew and Jew. So you would have thought, and we'll see soon this is not the case, you would have thought that these mitzvot in this pasuk only relate to mitzvahs between Jews and other Jews. And as we're well aware, there are certain bein adam chaveras that only apply between Jews. For example, lending money on interest is a prohibition between Jews and Jews, but whereas a Jew can lend a non-Jew money on interest without any problem. Maybe this also falls into that category where it sounds like it, but we'll see soon, absolutely not. The Meforshim are very clear that it's not, and we'll see soon why not. But there is a prohibition of Gneva in this Pasuk. What is Gneva? So Gneva obviously is money, but it's also other things. Look at these two Pasukim in number 2 and 3. First of all, Avshalom. Vayas Avshalom Kedavar Hazeh. Avshalom did this thing. Chol Yisrael, so all the Jewish people, Asher Yavol L'Mishpat El HaMelech. You know the story, Avshalom is pretending to be Mr. Holy, and he's presiding over the courts of his father David HaMelech, and actually what he's doing is he's recruiting people to join his rebellion against David HaMelech, and he therefore did this to the Jewish people. V'yiganev Avshalom et leiv Anshei Yisrael. Avshalom stole the people's lave. Where is a person's lave? And it's quite clear that a person's lave is here. The chol levavcha, nothing's happening down here. It's all happening up here. It's thinking and focusing. The mitzvah of Avat Hashem is clear in the Rambam, is a mitzvah of das. So Ginevas Halev, what did he steal? He stole their minds, he stole their understanding. So too, number 3, the Ignov Yaakov et Lev Lavan, Yaakov stole Lavan's heart, his mind, Harami, Albilti Yigidlo Kiborechu, by not telling him that he was running away. He misled him. This is Ginevas Halev, and when Ginevas Halev is translated into Halocha, Chazal call it Ginevat Das. And if you look at number 4 in the Mechilta, Chazal introduces and they say Shiva Gnavim Heim. There are seven type. I haven't had my ready break this morning, so my Weetabix, so I'm not fully focused. Shiva Gnavim Heim. There are 7 types of Gnavim. Harishon, the very first in the list, is Goynev Das Habrias, somebody who misleads other people. And look at the example he gives, one of a number of examples which we see soon. Hamasariv lechaveru la'orcha, someone who presses another person to eat with them. Ve'ein b'libo lukroisa, but they have no real intention of inviting them. It's just an invitation to make them look hospitable. Oh, you must come round for dinner. You really must come round for dinner. You know, there are people that say that all the time, and somehow or other you never end up there for dinner. Okay? So it's all just, like, once you see through it that it's all just a sham, then okay, so you're not being dealt from. But when people think, oh, that's so hospitable, Chazal have a very negative image of that. Because you are fooling people, and we'll see soon, this actually in many ways is worse than stealing their money, as we will see many examples coming up. There is a debate, which I'm not going to get into now in 5 and 6 and 7, as to whether this mitzvah, this Isser of Geneva's Das, is a Doraisa, it's actually part of Geneva Midoraisa, Minatora, or it's a rabbinic extension. There are Rishonim on either direction. The Smag in number 5 seems to indicate that it's Doraisa, the Smack in number 6 seems to indicate it's Darabonon, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say it's Darabonon, but others say it's Doraisa. It's for sure prohibited. And it may even be Min HaTorah, and we will see the parameters of that prohibition right now. Where is the discussion of this in the Gemara? And it comes in the following context. Is it prohibited to sell non-kosher food to non-Jewish people? That's the question. That's the Shaila. And the Mishnah in Chulin raises this question. If I have part of a cow, and this happens quite a lot, if people shech, and they found the cow, they find the cow is a nevela, or a trefer, rather, it would be nevela for shech, they find the cow is a trefer, and they can't eat it, and they can't sell it to the Jewish market, can they sell it onto the non-Jewish market? Is it a problem that you're selling it to non-Jews, even though it's not kosher? Yes?
We had a butcher shop in Wilson.
Okay.
And the kosher food stayed with us
and they sold. Oh, the kosher food stayed with the Jews and the non-kosher food went to... In England, I think it's well known that they do not porge the meat, they don't do nikur. So the whole rear side of the cow doesn't even get dealt with. It just gets taken away and sold to the non-Jewish market. It's actually a big question as to maybe they want to label the meat as killed by ritual slaughter and people won't buy it and it'll make kosher food very difficult. So that's the whole debate right now going through many places in Europe. The question is there a problem with this? And the answer is no, but look at number 8. Says the Mishnah, Sholeach Adam Yerech La'ovid Kochavim, you can send a piece of meat to a non-Jew, shegid hanasha b'toicha, even if it still has the gid hanasha in it, the gid hanasha is of course trait, it has to be removed, a Jew cannot eat the meat if the sciatic nerve is in it, mipnei shemakomon nikara, because you can send the whole leg of meat, because it's easily visible, the non-Jew can see that it has not yet been kashered, and therefore it's okay for them to eat. What's the problem? What's the problem if they don't realize it? They're not Jewish. Why do I care if a non-Jew eats non-kosher meat? He doesn't care. I don't care. Why should anybody care? So the Gemara explains the following issue. The reason that we're concerned that you can't mince it up and send it to them cut up where they won't realize is because they'll think, since you're a Jewish butcher, they'll think the meat is kosher. Ah, no, so let them think. What difference does it make? Picks up the Gemara in number 9. Mishum, the reason is, the keganiv leiladate, because you are fooling him. He thinks that he's buying kosher meat, and in fact you know it's trefa meat, and therefore he's buying a product that he doesn't realize he's getting. Ah, why does he care? He cares, because there are many non-Jews in the world who think that kosher meat is high quality, high standard, healthy. I don't know what people think, all sorts of things. Okay, is it or isn't it? I'm not getting into that now. But people think that. There are people in America that look for hechsherim even if they're not Jewish. They look to buy kosher products.
In England, there are some people who only talk kosher meat.
Really? Even the non-Jewish people?
Yes.
Why? Because the Jews are clever, they think it makes them clever. And what with the mad cow disease? Is that what you're thinking?
No.
There was a discussion back in the 80s. It still lives on with us, even though I'm a universal blood donor. My blood will work for anyone in the world. They won't take it in Israel, of course, because I'm English. Because they're worried that, you know, we're all going to wake up one day and go moo. And that will be the end of that. So because of the mad cow disease issue, then even though there was a debate, did it affect kosher meat in the same way as trefa meat? They're not taking any chances. Muslims eat halal meat. Correct. So the kosher is good enough for them too. So the problem is like this. You cannot sell the non-kosher meat to a non-Jew if he thinks it's kosher because you're misleading him. The Amar Shmuel, because Shmuel said, Asa lignoiv das habrius. You're not allowed to mislead people. Afilu das shal oivit kachavin. Even the view of a non-Jewish person, it makes no difference whether they're Jewish or non-Jewish. Ah, but didn't it say ish ba'amitah in the Pasuk? Isn't that an indication it's between Jew and Jew? So the Ritva points out, I'm not going to go through the Ritva number 10 inside, but I'll mention it. He points out, no, if you're not reading the punctuation in the Pasuk right, then you'll learn it wrong. Just look for a second back again at the verse in the number 1. It says Lo tignovu, there's an etnachta under the nun of tignovu. You see that? The little upside down, that little fishbone thing. Lo tignovu is a pause. It's Lo tignovu, period. Don't steal from anybody. Then the last things in the Pasuk relate to court proceedings between Jews and Jews, etc. But if a person were to think that it's only a prohibition between Jews and non-Jews, Jews and Jews rather, then they're not reading the Pasuk right. Punctuation is critical. You know, as we said when we talked about the Torah Shebaal Peh, there's a very big difference between let's eat grandma and let's eat grandma. There is, and it's only a comma. It's only a comma, but that comma makes a big difference to grandma. So you're not allowed to mislead people. Tanya, look at the examples the Gemara gives now. Very fascinating, very contemporary examples. Back in number 9, second line. Do not press someone to eat with you. But you know that you're not really inviting him. We looked at that before. But don't offer people gifts. When you know that they're not going to take them, you're just doing it to look like Mr. Nice Guy. And then he gives an interesting example I want to dwell on for a bit. Don't open up a barrel of wine for a person, for a guest, if it's been already sold to the shop. We'll see what that means in a minute. Ela in kein hoidio, unless you let them know that that's the case. What's the story here? So back in the day, they used to have wine by the barrel more than by the bottle. And to open up a new barrel of wine is a very big gesture. You know, it's a very big thing, a barrel of wine. And if I'm opening it for you, it's a sign of a great covert. Oh, well, crack open a new barrel just for you. Now, you come to my house for a Shabbos meal, or for a weekday meal for that matter, and I anyway have done a deal with the local makolid, that I'm opening up the barrel anyway. I'm opening it all up tonight. But you come for a meal and I say to you, oh, let's crack open a new barrel of wine. Why not? And you're thinking, psh, this guy, he'll open a new barrel. It's all a sham. I'm opening it anyway. He just doesn't realize that I'm doing that. But you know something? What could be wrong with that? He feels good. I feel good. No harm done. No, it's Gnevat Das. Why, says Rashi, Mipnei Shegonev Libo. You are misleading him. Lahachzik Lo Tzadok Hinam. He thinks he owes you a favor. But he doesn't owe you anything. Next time you go to his house, he'll feel obliged that he has to do something for you because you did something for him, but you didn't do anything for him. One of my rabbis had the following experience. He went to a meeting once in London, and the guy offered him a whiskey. The balabos who was serving offered him a whiskey. He said, oh, I'll have a little one. I'm not a big whiskey drinker. So he said, fine. So he opens up a cupboard, and he brings out a bottle of extremely expensive whiskey. The kind of stuff you see in the whiskey shop in Heathrow Airport or whatever, £1,000 a bottle, $2,000 a bottle, and he starts to pour it out for the rabbi. And the rabbi looked at this whiskey and said, no, no, please, don't waste the really good stuff on me. I'm not a big connoisseur, give me something straightforward. So the balabas stopped pouring and he looked at the rabbi and he said, you know something, rabbi? You've reminded me, I've really been meaning to ask a shaila about this for many years, but I've never really got around to it. So what's the shaila? He says, listen, rabbi, the truth is that somebody bought me this bottle of whiskey years and years ago, and we finished it years ago. I just top it up with whiskey from the supermarket. And I pour it out for people, and you know, 9 out of 10 people, they drink it, they go, psh, what a whiskey. Because people have no clue, really. They just say what they think they have to say. And he says, and the guy said to the rabbi, and I've been feeling a little bit guilty about this. So there's looking at him thinking, my goodness, Gnevat Das on a. But what's he feeling guilty about? He says, because I'm not sure if I have to toivel the bottle if I reuse it for the next. Get into the mind of a frum balabos. So, okay, that's a nice shaila. Good. That's a good question whether he does or doesn't. But my goodness me, he didn't even think of the Gnevat Das angle. Like, is how can that not be an issue? So that's a classic example. But there are many other examples as well. Let's carry on a little bit. The Lo Yomar Lo. I'm on the third line at the end of the line. The Lo Yomar Lo. Such shem in mipach reikan. Don't offer somebody something to take some oil from something which is really empty. You know they're not going to take it, but it's just a gesture. But in bishvil kvodo mutar. But if you're doing it for their kovod, meaning you're not doing it for you, you're doing it for them, not so that they will owe you one, but you're doing it for them, that's different. That might be mutar, because again, the Gnevat Das is only when they think they owe you a favor, which in this case they don't. So the Gemara says, really? Are you allowed to do it to them? Is that the case? But Ha'ula Ikle to Rav Yehuda. Ula went to Rav Yehuda's house once. Patach Lo Chabis Amukhrus Lechandani, and he opened up a barrel of wine which was really sold to the shop. Didn't we just say that was prohibited? So the Gemara says, no. Odia. He told him, he let him know. Didn't that make him feel bad? Not necessarily. It depends on how you say it. Give you another example. Let's say a colleague of yours is making a wedding in Bnei Brak. Happens to me, I teach in a lot of schools, I get invited to lots of weddings by people who don't really know me very much, but they put like a thing on the board saying everybody's welcome to come to the wedding, and I'm living in Yerushalayim, and the wedding's in Bnei Brak, and quite frankly, I'm not going to go, because I hardly know the guy, I don't know his kids at all, I won't know anyone at the wedding, and I'm not going to schlep through the traffic to Bnei Brak to go to the wedding. Mazel tov, very nice, but I won't go. But it turns out that I'm there anyway, I have to go for a meeting in Bnei Brak, and I think, no, I'm in Bnei Brak already, the wedding is around the corner, why not? So I pop into the wedding and I say, you know, Mazel Tov. And the guy says, oh, Kol HaKavod, very nice of you to come to the wedding, Shkoyach. So now, like, what do I do? You know, how do I address the Gnevat Das part there? So there's a way I could say, and I could either do Gnevat Das and say, well, what do you think? I wouldn't come to your wedding, Mazel Tov. Or I can say, look, you know, Baruch Hashem, it worked out really well. I was here anyway. I was coming for, you know, a meeting, and like I thought, why not come to the wedding? Wish Mazel Tov. There's no Gnevat Das. And if you say with the right nusach, presumably you can do it right. Someone asks me for a lift, for a ride in the car. I'm leaving the OU center and I'm getting into the car. And someone says, you know, can you take me to Echveis, to Harnof? Now, I don't live in Harnof anymore. I live in Al-Shvut. So they think I live in Al-Shvut. They're asking for a ride to Harnof. But it just so happens I'm anyway going to Harnof. So what should I say to them? Well, you know, Harnof, okay, come on, get in the car, I think it's Harnof, go on, why not? So they think I'm a big Baal Chesed, but really it's all a sham. But how far do you have to go? For example, we'll see a situation as follows. Let's say my friend is, who I hardly know, is making a wedding in Sydney, Australia. Okay? And I live in Israel. And I happen to be on holiday in Australia. And I show up at the wedding, and the guy looks at me and says, "Whoa, how amazing, you bought a ticket to come to Sydney, Australia, to come to my daughter's wedding, that's incredible. Yesha koach." So, like, who am I dealing with here? What's this guy thinking? Like, do I have any obligation of Gnevas Das when people are being objectively silly? Do I have to cater for everybody's lack of understanding? For example, I'll give you another example. If I sell fake sneakers, I sell Nike sneakers, okay? Leaving aside the copyright issue, which maybe I'm guilty of selling Nike sneakers, I'm liable to Nike for taking up the brand, but let's say I sell Nike sneakers, and how much do Nike sneakers cost? I don't even know. $200? Let's say $200, okay? And I'm selling them, fake ones, for $100. People are thinking, psh, they're getting a good deal. Now, the sneaker that I'm selling them is worth $100. It's a fake Nike sneaker worth $100. They're paying $100 for a sneaker worth $100. There's no Gnevas Mammon, but there's Gnevas Das, because they think they're getting Nike and they're not. What happens if I'm selling Nike sneakers, special price, for $5? $5. And a guy goes, "Psh, this is the deal of the century. Real Nike sneakers for $5. Who can believe it?" And the guy's just got like a van with the back door of the van open, like there in the Lower East Side or wherever it is. And the guy's thinking, "This is incredible. He's a mazel, you know, $5. Do I have any responsibility for such a person? So we'll see soon how that works. Or do I just turn around and say, "You know something, there's one born every minute, you know?" If I advertise on my... Advertising is a very big shiloh. To what extent is advertising misleading? You know, if you buy this beauty product, do you really expect to look like this person in the advert? You're gonna go there and say, "Look, I used this for 3 weeks. I don't look like her." They're going to say, "Madam, what did you think?" If I advertise best burgers in the world, and they eat them, and the guy says, "I'm sorry, these are not the best burgers in the world." So, you know, instinctively, I think you understand that there's no problem of Gnevas Das there, but the question is where you draw the line. We'll see that soon. Let's just finish the Gemara a little bit. It was sort of in the middle of the five lines up. Tan Rabbanan, Lo yelech adam lebeis ha'avel. A person shouldn't go to a shiva house. Ubiyado lagin hamakashkeshes. It's a bottle of wine that looks as though it's full of wine as a gift, but it's actually empty. It's just there as a gesture, and you're not really doing anything. Same idea. And you shouldn't fill it with water. Again, it looks as though you're bringing wine. You're really giving water, like the whiskey case. Says Rashi, the God will cover the breeze. But again, if you're doing it for their covered, you're not doing it for you. Someone gave me an interesting example. They had a dinner, and they had a number of dignitaries, and they had only three seats at the top table. Okay? And then a fourth person came that they weren't expecting, and they were thinking, "Oh my goodness, what are we going to do with him?" And they thought he probably wouldn't want to sit on the top table, but they felt that they had to offer him the top table, hoping that he would say no. "Would you like to sit, you know, on the top table?" "Oh no, no, it's fine." Baruch Hashem. Yeah. So is that Gnevas Das? He wants it? No, that's not Gnevas Das, because it's his covet. He really would like him to sit on the top table. He's not trying to fool him, but he's just, for whatever reason, it just works out that it's better off for him if he doesn't. But there's a covet angle there. Finally, the Gemara gets into real Gnevas of Mammon. Look at the last few cases. Tan Rabbanan, Lo yimkor adam lechaveru sandal. A person shouldn't sell another person a sandal. Sandal, of course, is a Hebrew word. Shel meita, made of a dead animal. Well, I mean, most sandals are made of dead animals. You wouldn't want it any other way, really. But he says, no, it's made of a meita, bichlal shel chaya, shchuta. You make out it's from a chaya, schutz meaning here, best quality leather from a healthy cow which was shecht especially for your sandals, and actually they're made from some scraggy old dead cow that it was just falling off on its last legs, and you're passing this off as high quality leather. Bipnei beis dvarim, because of two reasons, says the Gemara. Alev mipnei shematar, because you're fooling him, he's buying lower quality goods when he thinks he's buying higher quality goods, which could be certainly Gineva's das, it could be Gineva's mom and two. The echad mipnei hasakona, and another because of sakona. Who knows what diseases this cow might have? You're selling off the sandal and it's made from bad leather. And finally, he says, O yishaga adon lechaveiro chavit shal yayin, a person should never sell someone a barrel of wine. The shemen tzap al pia, but there's oil on the top. Why? They open it up, they think it's oil, they buy the oil, and actually it's not oil, there's just oil on the top. It's like when you go to the market and all the potatoes look beautiful, and they say, you say, I'll have 2 pounds of those, please, and they go underneath, and they give you the potatoes from underneath. You're not getting what you thought you were getting. Umase, and there's a story, be'echa shishigal chaveiro chavit shel yain, there was once a guy who sent a barrel of wine, v'shemen tzap al pia, and there was oil on the top, and the person who was buying it thought they were getting oil, and they weren't getting oil. The halach, and he went along with Zimun alav orchim, and he aleiad orchim, and he invited guests on the basis he had all this oil. The nichnasu, and the guests all arrived. A matza shehi shel yayin, and he found it was not oil; it was wine, and he was desperately embarrassed. The chanakit atzma, and he committed suicide. Now, obviously, this is not normal behavior, but you never know who you're dealing with. We'll see another case a little bit like that when we do Hachnasas Orchim, a similar case. But the guy was so mortified that the people had come round, it had this terrible ending. And the question also is, how much information, therefore, do you need to give people? Let me give you another case which I'll talk about at the end. I was once selling a second-hand car. Probably third-hand car. It was an old car that I bought second-hand. And I was selling it on when we left Israel. When we left England, rather, I was selling the car on. So I had a Shiloh. To what extent do I need to tell people all the things that are wrong with the car? You know? Do I have to make a list that the brakes squeak, and the lights flicker, and the belt sticks, and the thing whistles, and the doors... you know? If I make a list of all the things that are wrong with the car, then who's ever going to want to buy the car? On the other hand, if I don't tell people, am I misleading them? What did you suggest?
Take it to the garage.
Oh, take it to the garage. So, funnily enough, that's what one of the Dayanim on the London Basin told me. So, he said to me, very interesting, he said, look, if you're selling it, and we'll see how this fits into the halacha soon, if you're selling it to a little old lady that lives down the road, then you have to tell her all the things that are wrong with it, because what does she know about cars? And as far as, my father once bought a car from my mother, looked very nice, took it home, he lifted up the mat on the bottom, and there was a hole in the bottom of the car. Underneath the pedal, whoop, straight through, you know. He didn't think to look, who would think to look? So if you're selling it to my father, or to someone who doesn't know where to look, now he knows to look there, so don't try that one with my father anymore. Then you have to tell them. But they said if you're selling it to a car dealership, then we'll see how this fits into the halacha. Then maybe there's a different level of duty of care. In the end, I should tell you, I sold the car to a dealership on that basis, and as I was driving it up the motorway of the highway to trade it in, the car broke down. It only ever broke down once on the way to being traded in. So I was not a very happy camper at that stage, but the car obviously knew. Now, the question therefore comes up, how do I word things? How do I tell people? How do I not mislead people, but at the same time sell my product? So look at the following question, number 11. The Gemara asks the following question. Heichi machrizim. And this is fascinating. The Gemara wants to go to this level of detail to work out what the right thing to do is. How do I make an announcement on my butcher? I have a kosher butcher. And I have every now and then treif meat, because we shecht the cow and it's a treifer, and I want to sell it to the non-Jews. What do I put on my sign in the window to advertise this meat to the non-Jews? So not to mislead them, but so as to sell the meat. And again, this is asking a very interesting tension between advertising. I want to sell my product, I want to get people to buy it, but I do want to mislead them. So have a look at number 11. Heichem Akrizim. I'm a Rav Yitzchak by Yosef. So Rav Yitzchak by Yosef says, Nafal Bisra Levnei Chayla. Meat is now available for the Bnei Chayla, for the Chayalim were the non-Jewish soldiers that march through town every now and then, and you put a special sign up, meat, special deal, soldiers, you know, deal on Tuesday, meat for the soldiers. Fine. So the Gemara says, well, how can you say that? The lema, surely you have to say, Nafal treifasa lepnei chayla. Don't you have to tell them it's treif? Isn't that the whole point? How can you lead them on and think it's kosher? So the Gemara says, yeah, but they won't buy it. If I write on my sign, this meat is treif, who's going to buy that? No one wants to buy a second-hand product. So you can't say that. So the Gemara says, yeah, but hamakatayluhu. But surely you're misleading them otherwise. And the Gemara says, no. Inuhukamataya nafshaihu. They're only misleading themselves. If they think it's kosher, that's their problem. Really? So why is that different from the other cases? There were other cases. If I open a barrel of wine and give it to somebody and they think it's for them, so let them think it's for them. So, no, we said that was Gnevas Das. Absolutely not. You have to tell them. Here it seems, with the case of the non-Jews and the meat, it's their problem. If they think it's kosher, it's not. That's not your problem. Interesting noise. Does that mean anything specific? No, evidently not. Okay. So I often have an interesting example I give to my younger students. They relate to this as well, but everyone could relate to this. Let's say you're making a dinner party and you invite people round, and you're walking out from the kitchen at the end of the meal with a big chocolate cake. It's dessert, so you're walking out with a chocolate cake, and one of your friends says, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe you remembered my birthday. Thank you so much." So what are you going to say? So we'll see soon that is almost that exact case the Gemara is going to raise in a minute. Okay, so they're only fooling themselves. So we'll see other cases of right now. Says the Gemara, ki hada amma marzutra. So ki hada marzutra, breda Rav Nachman. It's just like the case of Marzutra, the son of Rav Nachman, who have a ka'azel misichra lebei mechuzah. He was going from Sichra to Bei Mechuzah. He was going from town A to town B. Let's say he was the scholar in residence, okay, in Bei Mechuzah for Shabbos, whatever. He's walking over to the town. V'rova v'Rav Safra have a ka'asu lesichra, but Rova and Rav Safra were walking in the other direction. So inevitably what happened? Pagu Hadadi, they met up in the middle on the road. Hu Savar Marzutra thought, he assumed, La'apehu Dikasu, that they'd come to meet him. They were the reception party to greet him into town. The Amalahu, and he said to them, Lamalahu L'Rabon L'Trach V'Asikulahai, you didn't need to go to all that bother. So nice of you to come and meet me. Like the birthday cake. Okay? And now they have a dilemma. Rava and Rav Safra. What are they going to say to him? Happy birthday, or the equivalent of being, oh, of course, you know, what do you think? We don't greet our scholars in residence. Amalei Rav Safra, who was very well known for being very straight. Rav Safra, I believe, is the one about the story said about Rav Safra. I think it was Rav Safra, where he was saying Kriya Shema in the shop, and someone came, made him an offer for something in the shop, and he didn't answer because he was saying Kriya Shema. So they increased the offer, and they increased the offer. They thought he was playing the, the cold shoulder treatment, until eventually they made him a very high offer, and he finished saying Shema, and he said, I only accept the offer that you made at the very beginning, because I had in mind that that was the offer I would accept. So he's very straight. Amalei Rav Safra, Rav Safra said to Marzutra, Anan loi havi yadin and ka'asima. We didn't know you were coming. Okay? I havi yadinan, if we know you were coming, we'd have baked a cake, right? I havi yadinan, tvei havi tarachinan. If we knew you'd have been coming, of course we'd have come to meet you, but we didn't know, we didn't come, so don't think we came. And of course now he feels like a fool. He's been screaming and shouting, how nice of you to come, and they never came. And he's just feeling very unhappy. Amalei Rava, so Rava says to Rav Safra, his colleague, and said to him, my time Amat Lehachi, why did you have to tell him that? You have to tell the truth all the time? We'll see. And Mr. Shekhar is like, there's issues of Shalom, Mutila Shalom Smithne, Shalom, you don't always have to tell everything just how it is. The Achlish Taylor died thing. You've made him feel all upset now. Why did you have to upset him? So Rav Safra answers, Amalei said to him, the Hakamatayin Amalei, we would have been deceiving him, we would have been fooling him. He thought we were coming to greet him and we weren't. I don't want to feel that him to think he owes us that, because he doesn't owe us anything. No, he answers, Ihu kumatai nafshe. He was only fooling himself. Robert turns around and says, no, you have no halakhic obligation to tell him it's his problem. If he screams and shouts in the middle of the road and thinks that this group of people are coming to greet him, that's his problem. Why on earth should they be coming to greet him? Why would anyone think such a thing? If you bring out a chocolate cake and someone screams, oh, I can't remember, I can't believe you remembered it was my birthday, I don't know, maybe someone would say, well, why, how would they know it was, why would they think that you knew it was their birthday? Why, that's their problem, let them think. Facebook, now you know everybody's birthday. That's true. This was, you know, maybe Facebook will change the halachic side. We'll see how that works exactly in a minute. There is a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos, which is very fascinating as to how to navigate through those cases. Some of these cases were clearly osser. You can't open up the barrel of wine and make them think that you did it for them. That's absolutely unacceptable. You can't sell them the sandals and make them. You can't do that. That's geneva. But you can apparently sell meat to the chayalim, to the non-Jewish soldiers, and they think it's kosher, but they've not, so that's their problem, they're fooling themselves. And you can apparently let Marzutra feel that you've come to greet him, and you haven't, because at the end of the day, it's his problem, he's fooling. Why? What is the difference between the cases? So Rashi's perspective is, it depends whether you said anything or not. Key number 12. Rashi says, "Inu kumatai nafshehu." They were only fooling themselves. The loy mashayli, because we're talking about the soldiers and the meat. Loy mashayli, they didn't ask e trefa e kashera. They never asked me. I'm the butcher. I'm serving the meat. They never said, "Is this kosher?" Obviously, if they ask, "Is it kosher?" I've got to say, "No, it's not. I can't lie." But they never asked. The haide katani le'el, and the case above, where in the where they're set with a sandal. But you're actually actively fooling him. Because normally the sandals are sold and they're normally made from healthy leather. And this is not, therefore it's ki'ilu, you made that representation. And similarly, if you open up a barrel, which is really sold for the shop, says Rashi, he says he makes an ukimta, technical word. He says the case is a specific case. It's when he said to him, Bishvilcha ani potcham. I'm doing this for you. Devadai goniv das. That's when it's awesome. Rashi says, if I say to the guy, I'm cracking open a brand new bottle, Chateau Lafitte, 1954, in your honor, and it's not true, that's geneva. But if I open the wine and the guy thinks, let him think. Similarly, Rav Safra, he says, Achrei she'anu loy amarnu loy. We never said to him, Likratacha yatsanu, that we came to meet you. We kept still. Rashi seems to understand, if you stay quiet, people can think what they think, that's not your problem. But if you say, or if you represent to them, or if it's normal that this is the case, then that is your problem. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says, no, I'm sorry. The standard actually is higher than this. Okay, number 13. Look at the Mektai Nafshai, it says, Tosfos, number 13. Lekach Nira, it seems to me, he says, Dahasam, over there in the case of the wine opening the barrel, Bestam, it's a case of Stam, meaning I never said anything, I just opened the barrel. Vasa, but it's still also why? Mishum She'ein La'orech La'asuki Adaite. It's nothing to do with what I said. It's not reasonable. I mean, maybe it's the lawyer in me using the word reasonable. But it's not reasonable of the person to think the mechuras lechemvini, that it had been sold to someone else. Meaning, what would the average guest think if I opened up a bottle of expensive wine? That it's for them. Ah, but I never said it was for them. Yeah, but what are they meant to think? Of course they're meant to think it's for them. Why would they think that I sold it to a shop? That's an unreasonable thing to expect. And therefore, even if I said nothing, says Tosfos, it's still called Genevos Das. Similarly, he says, in the case of the meat, they should have realized, they should have known, that it is trafe. Because otherwise, come on, why would I have a sign up in my kosher butcher, special deal for non-Jews? Like, use your brain. What do you think? Why am I selling this meat to non-Jews? Oh, I thought it was a kosher deal for non-Jews. No, it's not reasonable. It's a reasonable person, meaning you don't have to cater for people who are unreasonable or lacking in basic nous. Similarly, Umazutra, similarly to Mazutra, Iboilela Sukhya Daisa, he should surely have realized, says Tosfos, Shaloili Krasso Havabai, that they weren't coming to meet him, and Elitzur Chatzma. And therefore, when he says, oh, you're coming to meet me, you don't have to tell him because, you know, let him think. It's not reasonable. So Rashi says it's all about what you said. Tosfos says, no, it's all about what they think. What is reasonable for them to think? And in the end, actually, in this Machlokes, the Shulchan Aruch paskens lechumra. And he paskens like Tosfos. Look at number 16 for a second. Asur l'ramos b'nei adam. You're not allowed to, number 16 at the bottom of the page, you're not allowed to fool other people. B'mekach o'memkar, when it comes to selling, buying and selling, or lignoy datam, or to mislead them in any way. Kagoin, in yesh mum, if there is a defect, b'mekach, in what you're selling, like in the case of the car, tzarech lo'odi l'lokeach. You have to let them know. Okay? The im hu oivet chachavim, and if they're non-Jewish, lo yinko loso basanaveli, you shouldn't sell them non-kosher food. Bechetz kashchuta, on the basis that it looks like shechted, kosher food. The aflik no das abriyas bedvarim, even just to tell people things which is misleading is wrong. Shemara she'oise bishvelo, you're looking as though you're doing it for him. The eina oise, but you're not really doing it for him. Also, this is the case of the wedding, etc. The im hu davar, but if it's something, says the Shulchan, that he should have realized that you're not doing it for him. And he fools himself, and he thinks that you are doing it for him. For example, she gives the case of Mazutra. Someone meets you in the road. This person thinks you come to, for him. You don't have to tell them. So the Shulchan Aruch passage is like Tosfos. It's all about what's reasonable. If I turn up to the wedding in Australia, I don't have to, you know, explain that I'm anyway on holiday here. The guy wants to think I flew to Perth, Australia in order to see his daughter's wedding. Like, you know, Seder, whatever. Like, happy, I'm happy for him. You know, he's living in a little world of his own. Okay? But I do have to, like, it happened to me once, I went to a Shiva house in Beit Shemesh. Again, for some of the, it was Friday morning, I probably wouldn't have slept. I'm on early Shabbos in the winter, I would have driven to Beit Shemesh. I didn't know them very well, I probably wouldn't have gone. But I was there, my sister-in-law lives in Beit Shemesh. I was visiting my brother-in-law's sister-in-law, and I said, look, you know, I go to the Shiva. So when I went to the Shiva, so I visited the Shiva. So the next week, I didn't want to make a whole song and dance at the Shiva, but the next week I told the guy, look, I mean, I'm sorry to have to see you at a Shiva house. I was there anyway, worked out perfectly, I came to see you, I don't want to be going to Evdas, but, you know, I'm glad to have been able to come, even though, you know, I didn't like to see you at the Shiva, etc. He was fine, you know, whatever. But now he doesn't think he owes me a favour. You know, if I invite him to a wedding, he'll think, well, you know, I have to go to Manny's wedding because, look, he put himself out for me. The answer is, he realises that I didn't, and if he wants to come, let him come. The Rambam, if you just turn over the page for a second, let's look at the last few sources here. The Mishnah, I should say first, the Mishnah extends this to some fascinating cases. The Mishnah in Shvius, Kiyotzeba, similar case, Roitseach, what about a murderer? Shegala le'ir miklat, he's taken away to an ir miklat because he's murdered someone by accident. V'rotzo anshe ha'ir l'chavdoi, but they think that he's coming to give them shirim. You know, the people in the ir miklat also need a scholar in residence for Shabbos, so they want to give him covered, but really he's there because he has to be. Yoima, he has to say to them, Roitseach ani, I am here because sadly I'm like you. I killed someone, I'm guilty of being negligent. Amrulai, they say to him, Afal pi kein, we're all the same here. I'll still give you a cover. Then you cover him. Only then can he accept the cover. You can't accept as a rabbi, as anyone covered, based on a misunderstanding of who you really are. Similarly, the Rishami says in number 18, Barnash, if there's an individual, the Tani Chada Michla, that's learned one Masechta, the Hava Asil Atar, and he goes to a place, they're in a Moikvinle, they give him covered, but in Tarate, they think that he's learned two, they think he's a bigger Talmud Chacham than he really is. Tzarech Meimalan, he has to say to them, Ana Chada Michla Ana Chacham, I'm only a minor league Chacham, I'm not a major league Chacham, you're getting me mixed up. And if they say, look, we don't care, you know, it's very nice, then that's fine. I had a funny story once happened to me. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you before. When I was a young man, younger than I am today anyway, in London. So I was a lawyer. And I gave a few shurim, a little bit here, a little bit there, because people like to hear them, and, you know, whatever. So there was actually a group of guys in Hendon who wanted me to give them a shear, and I asked the Shire, Rabbi Kimchi, London. I said, look, you know, I should give them a shear. Let them. He said, no, they want you to give them a shear, you give them a shear. And the shear went very nicely. I received a phone call out of the blue from a very prominent Dayan living in London, who I won't name. And he said to me, are you Manning? So I said, yes. He said, oh, wonderful. I'd like to invite you to be the scholar of residence at my shul over Shabbos in a few weeks. And I said to him, this is obviously a case of mistaken identity. I said, I'm not a scholar in residence, I'm a lawyer. If you want me to advise you on your legal issues, and Dayanim also have legal issues from time to time, especially in London, that's another story. But if you want me to advise you on legal issues, but I'm not a scholar in residence. I'm sorry, you've got the wrong man. So he said, is this Manning at 202-1606? I said, yes, that's me. He goes, I've got the right man. So I said to him, look, Dayan, I've got to be quite clear with you. I really am an Am Haaretz. I mean, I've got to tell you, clear, I'm an Am Haaretz. Please, then there are no misapprehensions. He said to me, and by this answer, you'll probably work out which Dayan it was. He said, oh, yes, I know you're an Am Haaretz. He says, I've been told you are. So I said, oh yes. So he said, but listen, in my shul, all the people in my shul are also Amoratim. He says, and I'm a Rav, and I give them a shear, and they listen to me and they think, he's a rabbi, he gives shearim, I'm an Amoratim, what's that for me? He says, but if you're an Amoratim, and they're an Amoratim, and they hear you give them a shear, they'll think, oh, he's an Amoratim, he can give a shtikel Torah, if he can do that, I can do that too. So he said, I want you to give them the shear.
That
Dayan is for sure not an Amoratim. He's a big Talmid Chacham. He was. I went. And I did it. And it was very successful. I felt like a fraud, but I said, look, you know, I'm an Amoraris Mahadrin, you know? I'm a card-carrying Amoraris. It reminds actually me of the story Rabbi Brovender, who is, you know, a big Talmud Chacham local in Mattersdorf, he told me once he needed a Shabbos goy, and it's not easy to find someone who's not Jewish around, and it depends on, you know, where you live, but so he called in this guy, and he was a Russian guy, whatever, and he was about to turn on his whatever, and Rabbi Brovender went, stop, how do I know that you're not Jewish? He said, oh, Rabbi, I'm a card-carrying non-Jew. Look. And he had a Tuda. Tuda, this man is a non-Jew, Mahadrim and a Mahadrim. And can be relied upon for all needs for a non-Jew. I've never seen this before. Yeah, he was a card-carrying non-Jew. Amazing. So I was a card-carrying Amoraim just for a week. And the shirim actually went Baruch Hashem very nicely, and I think there was a svara in what he said, definitely a svara in what he said. I also had another, this is not related, but I had another one of these phone calls out of the blue from a very prominent Rav. It's actually very interesting. I was learning with my son. My son was about 5 at the time, and we were learning Sefer Bereishis. So my son said to me, I don't understand, Dad. He said, Adam, Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas. Okay? Because she was tricked. The snake told her this, told her that. She ate it. But Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas. Why? Like, he didn't seem to have any excuse. She just gave it to him and he ate it. So I said, that's a good question. I don't have an answer. And coincidentally, about 10 minutes later, I got a phone call from Rav Chuna Halpern. Rav Chuna Halpern in London. This was about 15 years ago, and this reminded me, because he was like the case of the Dayan, and that I got a phone from his Gabbai, of course, not from Rav Chuna Halpern. Says, this is the guy from Rav Chuna Halpern, and the Rebbe will be coming to see you in about half an hour. So this is obviously a mistaken identity, as is, well, you know, the Rebbe's coming. So he turned up with his whole court to my house. My son thought this was amazing, you know, the Rebbe here, whatever. I had no question with Rav Chuna Halpern at all. I didn't have any shul. I obviously got my name from someone. He obviously thought I was going to give him a large amount of money. Unfortunately, he was disappointed. But I wasn't disappointed, because when he came to me, I said, I have a question that my son asked me. And I asked him the question about Adam and Chava, and he showed me on the spot, there's a Dasa Kenya of the Balia Tosfos. So that Adam says there, when God says to him, why do you eat? So he says, Chava, v'natna libina eitz, v'aichel. She gave me from the eitz, and I ate. So if you look in there maybe it's the Torah, I can't remember exactly, just remind me. It says Minha Eitz, what did she give him Minha Eitz? She hit him round the head with a stick until he agreed to eat. That's what he means Minha Eitz, and that's why he ate. Interesting. So you should look there. I don't remember that case as the first case of domestic abuse recorded. She's hitting him round the head until he eats the fruit. What exactly that means? So I told my son. So he asked me, he said, look, you know. But that's maybe not the only answer. But it just reminded me of that case. So a person is not allowed to pretend that they're a Talmud Chacham and they're not a Talmud Chacham. This is a very important thing. Why? Why is Gnevus Das so important? Let's end with this, and then I'll tell you a final story that will hopefully illustrate these things. Why is Gnevus Das more serious in many ways than Gnevus Mammon? So if you look here in number 21, Vayitza Hashem Elokim Es HaAdam Afa Min HaAdama. This is a famous pasuk. Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, v'hi ha'adam lenefesh chayim. Adam became a nefesh chayim. Nefesh chayim. What is it, a nefesh chayim? A famous unklus at the end. What does unklus say a nefesh chayim is? A ruach memalala. A being with the ability to speak. The ability to speak and communicate is an incredible thing that only human beings have. I can, through my speech, affect the inside of your mind. I can persuade you of things, and I can tell you things, and I can turn what's in my mind and put it into your mind through the medium of speech. It's an incredible thing. If I steal somebody's wallet, so I stole their wallet, but if I put false ideas into your head, I've got into the most intimate part of a person is inside their mind, and I've taken from them something which is theirs. Which is their understanding of reality. There is nothing worse that a person can steal than another person's understanding, another person's mind, through and to misusing the power of speech in that way. It's sheker in that sense is perhaps the most serious thing a person can steal from another person. We'll talk about Emerson Sheker in more detail when we get to Emerson Sheker. I've brought you a number of practical examples on the bottom of the page, on page 3 in English there, and page 4, various different applications of Gnevus Das. Selling low quality goods for high prices, fake goods, we talked about that. Also covering up faults. You know, I'm not allowed to paper over the cracks in my house in order to persuade someone there's no cracks, but I'm allowed to give it a coat of paint and make it look nice. You know, when you're selling your house, you don't have to leave all the dirty washing up in the sink, because that's what it normally looks like, so I don't want to be Gnevus Das. No, you can make it look nice. There's a difference in an interview between presenting your best side and lying about your qualifications. Obviously that would be Gnevus Das in many ways as well. And I've put other examples there as well. Are you allowed to give a second, this is an interesting question, are you allowed to give a second hand gift on the basis that it's new? This happens all the time, right? Someone gives you a gift, re-gifting, and you pass it on. Re-gifting. Is there anything wrong with re-gifting? It's still new? We got a book, a cookbook. I think it was more attention given to my wife than to me. We got a cookbook for our engagement. It said on the front of the book, Mazel Tov to Anthony and Sarah on the occasion of your engagement. And on the next page it said, Mazel Tov to Malcolm and Sheila on the occasion of your silver wedding. Great. Yes.
It's the same case with dishes when I got married. I didn't find out, so I took them out of a box to toil them.
Right.
And then I found the other guy.
You found the other guy. But is there a problem with that? Or does everybody know that that's what happens? If everybody knows, there's no Gnevus Das.
When they don't know.
What's that? Yes, Mishloach Manos. You know, everyone knows with Mishloach Manos that you're playing, you know, when the music stops, you're the one that gets left with 25 baskets of tasteless candy, which is all chometzkin. But maybe it depends on the situation. Meaning, if I give Mishloach Manos, everybody knows it's been passed on. But if I buy my wife an anniversary present, then she doesn't think that it's been bought for somebody else or given to me, then there could be a real Geneva's Dad from her. There was an interesting Shaila that came up in the Rabbonim here many years ago. This is really an Emerson Shecker question, which we'll deal with. Somebody gave his wife fake jewellery. Paste jewellery. Looked very nice. Very expensive, but it was really very cheap. She opened up the box, she gasped, and she said, "Sweetheart, how much did you pay for this?" And he said to her, "Darling, you really don't want to know." Emes, Sheker, we'll see. Clearly, Sheker, clearly. But the context might make a difference as to how you know. You had a question?
Is there a difference, obviously, someone steals an item from you?
Right.
The item, whatever the
right.
But if someone tells you something wrong or misleading,
right, how can you be compensated? Good. Right, so I put at the end of the sheet here, the English, you don't need to look at it now, but there is a process of tshuva. A person has to call somebody up and say, if you've misled them, you have to tell them, look, I misled you, I'm sorry. It's very difficult to do. I gave you the impression of this, that, and the other, and it's not true. That's part of the process of giving back the hashiv as a kneva. You can't give them back the lost object, although the object you stole, but you can give them back the information. And it might make you look like a fool, but you know that's part of the tshuva that you need to do. Sometimes it's difficult to do tshuva, and that's part of the process. Let me end with a yes, sir.
On your passive deceit, you have getting a promotion and defending yourself.
That's a good question. I'm not passing that these things are awesome, but that's an interesting question that's come up in many cases. Let's say in the firm, you have a clear intention to leave the firm. You've been headhunted to somewhere else. Okay? And you haven't told your firm yet. You don't have an obligation to tell them that you're going to leave, because you'll tell them you'll serve your notice. Let's say your notice is a month's notice, and you've already been decided to go work somewhere else. And then 6 months before, they say, we've decided in the firm to train you, invest in you, you're one of our most valued employees, we'd like to spend $8,000 sending you to a special course to enable you to be able to raise to the next level. But you know you're off, you're leaving. That's the Shaila, and I don't quite know what the answer is, because on the one hand you don't have an obligation to tell them you're leaving, but they're seemingly seriously wrong in allowing them to invest in you in the clear knowledge that you're leaving the firm. So, and that happens to people that I know. Let me end with a story. I heard this story from Rabbi Israel Tauber. This will appeal to certainly some of you here. Rav Israel Tauber is a very interesting gentleman. He's big time at Chacham, but he's also involved in business and has all sorts of dealings in America. And he told me the following story. There was a fellow who went to a shir. He was a bit of a Baal Tshuva, goes to lunchtime shir here and there. And the rav of the shir was giving a shir about Geneva's Das. So he told him, you can't sell something unless you tell someone that there's a defect. If there's a defect, you have to let them know. We don't say caveat emptor in halacha. Caveat emptor is in English law, in American law, even though in English law and American law that's changed a lot now, the buyer beware, meaning if you don't ask the question, I don't have to tell you. In halacha, that's not the case. You have to tell people. Fine. So the guy comes up to the rabbi at the end of the shir and says, Rabbi, you're causing me a lot of trouble. You know that? He goes, why? He goes, because this... I bought a building many, many years ago, and it's got a crack in the basement. He deals in property. It's got a crack in the basement, it floods, and he's been trying to sell it on to somebody else. But of course, people ask, the lawyers ask questions, are there any defects in the this and the that? He says, no, I have to tell the truth, and every time I tell them this, they pull out of the deal, and I can't sell the property. Finally, he says, somebody has exchanged contracts. They never asked. I never told, I don't have to tell by law, and then they're going to buy this property. Finally, I got to say, are you telling me that I have to tell them that there's a defect? Even though in English law, maybe I don't, although I'm not passing English law either here, whatever. So the rabbi said, yes, you have to tell them. But you can decide the best time to tell them, but you have to tell them before they buy it. So what happened is at the completion meeting, they're all sitting there at the big mahogany tables, all the advisors, the lawyers, the accountants, the engineers, signing bits of paper and passing it all around. And at the very last minute, the lawyer for the seller hands over and says, we'd like to give this memorandum to the buyer. So the buyer opens it up and it says, I wish to inform you, before you buy this property, that there is a crack in the basement which floods, and I wish you to buy this property in full knowledge of this defect. So the guy reads and says, what's this? He says, well, you can read. It is what it is. He says, but you don't have to tell me this. Why are you telling me this? So he says, look, I'm an Orthodox Jew, and we have the principles in Halakha, it's Jewish law, and even though in English law maybe I don't have to tell you, but in the Hebrew law I do, in Jewish law I do, so I need to do the right thing for religious purposes, I need to tell you. So he goes away and he speaks to his lawyer, and they come back about 10 minutes later, and they say, listen, if you're such a religious Jew, why didn't you tell me this before I exchanged contracts? So he says, well, it's funny, but I actually didn't know this law, and I subsequently went to a class and they taught me, and you know, it all happened in that way afterwards. So he goes away and he comes back 10 minutes later and he throws the paper on the table, the buyer, and he says, you Jews, I know what's going on here. You've got a higher offer for this building and you're trying to get me to pull out of the deal even though we have a signed contract. I can see through you. And he said, I'm going to sign on this deal whether you like it or whether you don't like it, crack or no crack. Fine. So I can't always promise a happy ending, but nevertheless, Geneva staff is something to give a little thought to. Okay.
Have a good day.